pleased to be joined by Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. He's a Heisman Trophy voter, and his wife loves the show. Adam, thanks for coming on.
It's good to be on. This is the I made it moment once my wife watches this. She's a religious watcher. I do admit I watch a good deal, but she's the fan in the family for sure. She's more of a Cousin Shane, but she loves both of you guys, and I obviously watch too, especially during the season. I love the recaps of the games. They're sort of off the wall recaps.
Well, I'll be honest, Adam, that used to hurt more when fans were like, "Yeah, this Cousin Shane show is what it really is. That's why we're tuning in." But I got over that years ago, so I'm used to hear that. That's great to hear. But obviously, this is a time of the calendar where there's not much going on, but they have somehow managed to keep college football in the news for seemingly 12 months this year. And the big thing that everybody's got their eye on, and it even goes over a lot of fans, it goes over my head, to be quite honest with you, Adam, is the revenue sharing and everything. And you did a really good article recently, the Knoxville News Sentinel. I'll put a link in the description. But basically just asking the question, in this model where, again, the figures are kind of vague at this point in time, but around $20 million to spend on athletes, can a school like Tennessee, which prides itself as an everything school, can you be elite in everything? What made you want to write this article?
Well, I mean, I know that's the discussion a lot around a number of schools like Tennessee, where you win in virtually everything. Now, to be clear, I don't think that's going to affect a lot of Olympic sports like track and cross country and tennis and those sort of things. Winners in those sports are going to be those that put more scholarships into those sports because the roster limits are going to raise, and Tennessee will be one of those. But if you look at sort of the major sports, football, men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, maybe even softball, but especially the top four or five, you're going to have to divvy up the money in strategic ways. And this will be with revenue sharing, but it'll also be with NIL. Revenue sharing is the cap, right? So, by the way, we say $20.5 million. There's actually a number in there that will count as scholarships. So the number when people do percentages shouldn't be at $20 million. It should be out of $18 million. That's a whole lot of math, but just trust me on that. So most schools, 75% is going to go to football, 15% will go to men's basketball, 5% to women's basketball, 5% to baseball. Some schools will sort of adjust those numbers a little bit. You may go 80% in football. You may drop down to 65 or 70% in football, and then you can give more money to other sports. Some schools are going to do that strategically. Tennessee can't really afford to do that. Like, where do you cut among the major sports? You've got to go at least 75% for football, because that's where the majority of your revenue comes. And let's face it, this is an SEC podcast, right? Football wins, you win. If football loses, you lose. And so you've got to keep the numbers up in paying football players. But men's basketball, are you going to cut there if you're Tennessee? Rick Barnes is knocking on the door of the Final Four. Who knows how long you'll have him around? You've got to load up his roster to try to be competitive to make a run of the national title. So a lot of schools would say, okay, we're good in football, we're good in basketball. Like Florida at times can say that. But then the Lady Vols are a brand of themselves, and you have to keep that competitive. And Tennessee has dumped a lot of NIL money into Lady Vols this offseason to try to get Kim Caldwell a roster that she can make a run with deep in the NCAA tournament. So then other schools say, okay, fine, we've got those covered. Let's just trim some of the payroll off of baseball. Again, Tennessee, a few years ago, you could do that. You can't do that now. Tony Vitello just won a national title. They can get there again this year. And so there's just not much wiggle room. And if you look at it and say, what's the difference between a couple percentage points here and there? Well, I mean, again, if you take the number of $18 million, and that's where the salary cap budget is, that means each percentage point is $180,000. So 5% to a sport like women's basketball or baseball is $900,000. 2% is $360,000. So if you have one roster that's paying $9,000 in pay to their baseball team and another that's paying $360,000, you're talking about a number of players that will make a difference between a national champion and just another team. And Tennessee just does not have the luxury really to maneuver those numbers like a handful of schools do. If you look in the SEC, Kentucky, I know, will put a lot of NIL money into men's basketball. But within the rev share, they could trim off a football. Because let's face it, Kentucky's not going to win a national championship in football. They're probably not ever going to get to a playoff. If you're Vanderbilt, you can massage those numbers. If you're Mississippi State, why put so much into football? Try to get baseball back where it needs to be. Maybe Missouri, the same thing. So it's just Tennessee and a handful of other teams, other schools, just cannot change their numbers up like a lot of others. They have to pay to the max of what they can in each sport.
And then in addition to all of this, of course, they can still get legitimate NIL deals, which will be, that, again, that's a whole nother convoluted thing, but apparently they're going to be verifying with this Deloitte company, whatever. I don't know if you saw this, Adam, but Ross Dellinger, I guess he was at the ACC spring meetings recently, and Deloitte was there, and they apparently told them that about 70% of the NIL deals that are active today would be denied, according to their service that is trying to prove these are legitimate NIL deals. So what, I mean, what is this naturally going to lead to? It's probably going to lead to money under the table, like we were a couple years ago, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, it'll lead first to lawsuits, then it'll lead to money under the table. Yeah, I mean, and to hammer home the point that you were mentioning there, the big number in paying players is rev share that's under the salary cap plus NIL. So that's where you get Texas football supposedly getting 35 to 40 million. Tennessee will be in the 20s in millions in football. Most SEC teams are going to be in the 20 millions, but that big number is what the schools rely on. Now, how big can that number be? A lot of it depends on how that NIL clearinghouse goes. I'm a skeptic. If you pump some truth serum into ADs and administrators around the conference and certainly around college football, there's a segment of those administrators that believe this could be the thing that brings the market down. That the clearinghouse will be successful and you'll be able to kick out a lot of these NIL deals. I think there will be an attempt to do that. I just don't think it's going to be successful. Because the thing is, a legitimate NIL deal is I am a quarterback and I'll go do three commercials for your siding business, and for that I get $300,000. Okay, well, that's legitimate. I have name recognition. I'm doing the work. I'm doing commercials. But who's to say that $1 million for one Instagram post, that has no value? I can argue that one if I'm doing that for the collective, one Instagram post for $1 million, I can argue that that brings others to the school or the collective. That stirs up fans to give more money. Maybe that encourages a booster to give more money to the collective. So then my name recognition, my brand has value of whatever value that the seller puts on it. That's the thing is, in any transaction, you have a buyer and you have a seller. And if the buyer and the seller agree on the price, it's sort of strange to me the idea that a clearinghouse could come in the middle of those two and say this is not valid. And that's why I think the clearinghouse is not going to work. A lot of ADs think it will. I think there's wishful thinking that it will at least.
And then so I mean the real question with all this revenue share, which you kind of hammered home in your article, guys like Danny White, the AD at Tennessee, are they going to have to sit around and say, okay, what's more valuable, being, or at least attempting to be dominant in football, which, just ask Ole Miss, you could throw all the money you want, A&M, throw all the money you want at it, doesn't necessarily going to fix everything, which some fans, I think, want. Some fans want all in on football, while others, I mean, it seems like it's completely split, Adam, where some people are like, well, I love basketball, I love baseball, I love this as a year-round thing. Do you think at the end of the day, this is going to have to be a tough decision that ADs make?
Yeah, I mean it is. Unless the percentages are standardized, then the same percentages you're probably going to apply to NIL. There's talk in the SEC that they could mandate the percentages. They could say like everybody has to do 75% for football, 15% for men's basketball, and so on. I'm not sure that that's going to happen. I think the SEC would rather have each school sort of have their own strategy. But beyond the rev share, the same questions are going to be asked in NIL. And how much money is dedicated to those sports. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard for every AD. It's funny, since I put the article out and laid this scenario out, I've had a number of Tennessee fans that have been pretty split. Some will say, hey, listen, we're a football school, and this has been awesome that baseball's won the last couple of years, but we're a football school, and we better win in football. And my happiness year round depends on whether or not Tennessee beat Alabama or beat Georgia or got to the playoff, right? But then there are others that have said to me, hey, I'd rather win a baseball national championship because I don't think football is ever going to be better than a top 10 team. They're not going to win a national title. So just keep things as is. And then you find the same thing with Lady Vols. You find that with men's basketball. You can see a split in the fan base as much as you can see a split in strategies, I think, of different philosophies at Tennessee. Danny White is phenomenal at raising money. And so they'll be successful in keeping the facilities state of the art. They're going to fully fund all these scholarships. Baseball is going to have a ton more scholarships. And so that's going to help. And in the Olympic sports, they're going to be super competitive because they're going to, again, fund all those things that isn't pay for players, all the extra things. It's just around the margins, they can't trim player pay in small, subtle ways that some schools can. And that what that means is you've got to be really good at player evaluations and make every dollar count. That means Kim Caldwell cannot miss on a girl she gets out of the transfer portal. It means Tony Vitello's got to hit with that pitcher. It means especially that Josh Heupel has to, bat near 1,000 in the transfer portal. And which, by the way, he's done pretty good in the portal. I will say more so, Josh Heupel needs to sign recruits that can come in and play really early. Because I think one criticism in football the last couple of years is they've signed solid classes and paid to get those classes, but then those guys have just sat and not played. And you hate to look over on the sideline. People don't know the dollar figures of these, but you hate to look over the sideline and say, there's five offensive linemen there that are making good six-figure salaries and not playing. There's a wide receiver making six figures and not playing. And then you eventually lose them in the transfer portal. You've got to be strategic in how you spend your money, and that's going to be a challenge at Tennessee as much as anywhere.
Yeah, well, there's really no answers, but I figured, this would be a conversation worth having. But and speaking of no answers, I had to get your thoughts on new Tennessee quarterback Joey Aguilar. Apparently, he's getting on campus. I think he's on campus now. Any early read on him or anything? I know it's so early, but what thoughts on what Tennessee's getting and what are the odds you think that he's a starting quarterback week one against Syracuse?
I think the likelihood is that he's the starting quarterback. It really depends if he can pick up the offense. I mean, we got to think about this. This is, I think, the fourth offense he's learned in 28 months. Junior college, then App State, then UCLA, and then he's got to unlearn all of UCLA and learn UT. He's got time to do it. But I won't say the coaching staff is rooting for Aguilar to get it. But certainly that was the plan. I mean, they tried to get established starters, and they weren't going to do that if they thought Jake Merklinger was a surefire starter. And so I think it really just depends on, Merklinger has familiarity in the system. Aguilar has the experience. He's started a bunch of games. Granted, it was at App State, but he has the experience. So can he close the gap in the summer and then fall camp, close the gap of familiarity with the system so that his experience can take hold? They certainly hope so. They'll adjust the offense as needed for him. Aguilar can throw it well enough. He can run to extend plays. He's run some RPO stuff, which Tennessee has in its playbook. He's run out of the pistol, which, we did see in spring practice with Nico. Which, by the way, that's a funny thing. Nico wanted the offense changed. They actually changed it in spring in subtle private ways that were done for him, and then he left. yeah, I mean, Aguilar can do the things physically he needs to do. The thing is, at App State, he threw too many picks, especially his last season. If you throw picks, you're not going to play in this offense. I mean, they've had Josh Heupel has had Hendon Hooker, who had a historically great touchdown to interception ratio. Then Joe Milton, who had a really, really good one, and Nico had a good one. And so if you throw too many picks, you're not going to play in this offense. And so he's got to get that out of his system. I think one good argument in his favor is that too much was put on him at App State. He was down early. He had to win games, so he took too many chances. They need to get that riskiness out of his game. We'll see. Fall camp's going to be interesting because it's going to be a legitimate competition. Coaches like to say that. This one is true. Merklinger will have a shot. They would rather not have to go to George McIntyre, but he will also be in the competition for sure.
And then you got me thinking about something that really has been on my mind all off season. But and not suggesting Josh Heupel's on any kind of hot seat, because I think, short of beating Alabama that first time, I don't think he's ever been more popular than he is right now in Knoxville after the Nico saga. But how much do you think he has on the line, given the fact that I realize they just made the playoff? I'm not saying he's doing a bad job by any means, but it certainly seems like his offense has maybe been figured out a little bit in the SEC, and now with this massive overhaul with on the offensive line, at the receiving core, losing SEC Offensive Player of the Year at running back, and then throw in a new quarterback on top of it. I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say Tennessee may struggle on offense, and quite frankly, they've kind of been struggling at times prior to this. So how much has he got on the line to show that, if he has a top five offense in the SEC this year, I mean, I think that would be a remarkable coaching job.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big opportunity here. If he can keep things together and let's say go 8-4, 9-3, that says a lot for Josh Heupel as the coach long term. I think it's interesting with Heupel is that the results say this is on an upward trajectory. They just made the playoff. They just won 10 games. I know offense was not as good as most people would think it should be, and I'm one of those, but they did lead the SEC in rushing, so it's not like the offense was bad. Results-wise, this is on an upward trajectory, and I think a lot of Tennessee fans tend to forget they were in the playoff a few months ago. But narrative-wise, it's on a downward trajectory because the narratives are his offense has been figured out. So, hey, that's over. They're never going to be great in offense again, like they were in 2022. That's a legitimate fear with a lot of fans. The narrative is he won with Jeremy Pruitt's players, and those players are now gone. So now the talent is going to go down. That he, got lucky with Hendon Hooker. That was not his recruit. He started Joe Milton. And so there are questions of how is he as a quarterback whisperer? Because Nico was, coming around, but he didn't play like a five-star necessarily. So the narratives point to a downward trajectory. The results say everything is still fine. And I think that makes this sort of a crossroads season. It was going to be with Nico anyway, but I think it makes this a crossroads season because if he can keep things together and he can win with a quarterback he just picked up late, people are going to give him some credit for that. Schedule shapes up to this schedule would be very difficult with this team to get to the playoff to win 10 games. It's not that difficult to win 8, though, if you can just be competitive. You can lose in the swamp, lose to Alabama, lose to Georgia, lose at home to, I think, what will be an improved Oklahoma team, and you're still 8-4. You can lose all those games and still be 8-4 because all that's left is you got to beat Kentucky and Mississippi State. Arkansas's in Neyland. You got to beat Syracuse. Like, it's not that hard to get to 8-4, but I think a lot of that depends on the quarterback and the weapons around him, and the weapons around him look like they could be worse than last year. The quarterback certainly right now is a step back, and so there's not much room between 7-5 and 9-3 with this team right now. And I would probably split the difference and say this is an 8-4 team right now. And by the way, I didn't think they were going to be a playoff team with Nico. I thought they were probably a 9-3 team with Nico. For a lot of the other questions that still loom over this team.
Well, I think I've found a solution, Adam. Just bring Jeremy Pruitt in as recruiting director. I think he's available. All right, last thing for you, Adam. Really appreciate your time. We're starting to see some of these preseason polls and projections and all this, that, and the other. And Tennessee is largely nowhere to be found. Do you think that's fair? That Tennessee and maybe even in the 20s, late 20s, what have you, or unranked. Do you think that's a fair assessment of where Tennessee is entering the 2025 season?
Yeah, I think it's fair because 8-4 record for an SEC team is late 20s or just out of the poll. And so I think a lot of pollsters, preseason pollsters, are looking at it and saying, I see probably 4 losses with that team. Again, it may be those 4 that I named, or it may be 3 of those that I named, and they drop one you don't expect, which, Tennessee has done the last 3 or 4 years. And so that's, I think, pollsters looking at it and saying this is an 8-4 football team. And anybody that puts them into the teens is saying this is a 9-3 football team. I think it's as simple as that. I thought last year they were fortunate to get where they were. I thought the schedule helped them a lot. The defense helped them a lot. Dylan Sampson helped a lot. But they were not a team, that we're ever going to win more than 10 games last year. I think they maxed out. And I think their max out with Nico this year was probably going to be 9, maybe 10 wins, probably 9. And now the max out is probably in that 8-9 range. And so you're talking about a team that's barely top 25. That could change pretty quickly. I mean, they have Georgia really early in the schedule. It could go one way or another if they get blown out by Georgia or if they're competitive against Georgia. Yeah, I think it's fair. I think it's fair. I think that could play into Tennessee's hands if they surprise some people. I will give this warning, though, that I think a lot of the Tennessee fan base sort of really applauded Josh Heupel and Danny White and the UT program and said, we're going to give you guys some slack during the season because of what you went through with Nico. This wasn't fair. Nico picked up and left. You guys sort of got screwed over in this situation. Josh Heupel won that press conference, but that was an April press conference. And if they come out and go 7-5, or to some fans, even 8-4, I don't think there's going to be much forgiveness that stretches from April to November.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Adam, thank you so much for your time. Before you go, can you tell my audience how to follow you and how to find your work over at the Knoxville News Sentinel?
Yeah, if you're in Knoxville in print, it's the Knoxville News Sentinel online. It's knoxnews.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Adam Sparks.
All right, thank you so much, Adam. Sorry, I didn't know it was one and I didn't know it was different. I've always just known it as Knoxville News Sentinel.
It's I think if anything before a certain year, it's the News Sentinel, and after a year, it's knoxnews.com. I think I'm technically also the Tennessee Vols football beat writer for the Tennessean. For the commercial appeal and
Yep.
any other property that we own. So I answer to a lot of names and a lot of sites.